In the meantime, I want to take you back about 6 months or so. Football season, right? The air is almost palpable with electricity. People are excited. They're getting into this whole football spirit. And fans are gearing up to cheer on their favorite teams. And I know there are a variety here, so I'm going to be careful not to specify. But really, how many of you during football season have done the, yes, yes? Oh, don't lie, you do too. And what about reuniting with a loved one after a long time apart? You know, when you see that person after so long, isn't it great? You respond with this joy that precedes you. And who here remembers, and I know there's a few of you, Beatlemania? Girls were throwing themselves and crying and all sorts of things. And even John Lennon said that the band had become more popular than Jesus. Isn't that something? It was February 27th, 1991, in the height of Desert Storm, if you remember. Ruth Dillo received a phone call from the Pentagon, not one that any mother wants to hear when her son is or her child is at war. It stated that her son, Clayton Carpenter, private first class, had stepped on a mine and was killed in Kuwait. Ruth Dillo later wrote, I can't even begin to describe my grief and my shock. It was almost more than I could bear. For 3 days, I wept. For 3 days, I expressed anger and loss. And for 3 days, people tried to comfort me without success, because there was no comfort to be had. The loss was too great. But 3 days after she received that message, the telephone rang, and the voice on the other end said, "Mom, it's me, I'm alive." Ruth Dillo said, "I couldn't believe it." But then I recognized his voice, and he really was alive. The message she had received was a mistake. She said, "I laughed, I cried, I felt like turning cartwheels, because my son, whom I thought I had lost, was alive." Can you even begin to imagine what that mother went through? How she must have felt? I know I can't. But some who walked in the pages of the New Testament would have understood how she felt, because they themselves went through that. That day, they watched their best friend and their teacher being nailed to a cross, suffering. They witnessed his pain as he cried out, "I thirst." They listened as he finally bowed his head and said, "It is finished." And then they watched as his limp, cold body was taken from the cross and buried. All of their hopes and their dreams about everything he talked about were buried with him. Friday and all day Saturday, they mourned until, on that first day of the week, early in the morning, they arrived at the tomb and found that the stone had already been rolled away. And an angel told them, "You're looking in the wrong place. You're looking for the living among the dead. He's alive. He's risen just as he said he would." The 15th chapter of 1 Corinthians is the great resurrection chapter of the Bible. I like to go to this when grief is at its height, when we're dealing with the really hard stuff in life, when we lose someone. Because Paul writes things like, I want to remind you of the gospel which I preached to you, the one you believed in and stood firm on. He also said things like, if all this were not true, would we be risking our very lives to spread this message? Would we be going through all the torture and all of these things? This is true. This is real. And with those words still ringing in our ears, let's consider how we respond to the transforming power of the resurrection. Think first about the cross and the tomb. Before his resurrection, the cross was known only as an instrument of horrible, unspeakable death. In fact, the cross, the wood soaked with human blood. So terrible was this form of execution that the Romans actually prohibited Roman citizens from being killed this way. Crucifixion was only for the worst enemies of Rome. It was a particularly humiliating, slow, and cruel death. But today, because of his resurrection, we respond differently. We wear a replica of a cross around our necks, a piece of jewelry, a thing of beauty. It's been transformed. For people all around the world, the cross is a symbol of hope because we know what happened. It's a reminder of God's love for us. How do we respond to this kind of extreme transformative power? Jesus transforms the horrible into something beautiful. And what about the tomb? Before the resurrection, for most of the world, the grave was the final chapter. It was the end. It was goodbye. The closing of a great door. But because of the resurrection, we can rejoice today because it's not the end of everything. We know differently. It's where life actually really begins, in eternity, and it will never, never end. And how about responding to life itself? The transformation of life itself because of the resurrection. Have you been listening to the messages of the world lately? There was a time when it was so hard for me to even listen to the news. I couldn't even be in the same room because it just weighed so heavy. There are voices of hopelessness and despair, and they're so pervasive today. There's terrorism. There are diseases which have no cures. There are problems in the home. There are children being abused. There are people sleeping on the streets. It's so easy to become filled with despair, but we have the scripture to teach us the way to care for one another, and that offers hope. Jesus said, after he took a drink of water, Jesus said, I have come to bring you life abundant, to show you how to live, and to bring hope and peace. Not peace as the world gives, but peace as only I can give. That's what he came for. And even if life is racked with pain or loneliness or sorrow. We can find strength that comes from being transformed and the wellspring of hope. And finally, there's the transformation of death, right? Before the resurrection, death was the end. And I'm guessing that we all, at one point, have buried someone that we love very much, and we've said goodbye. How really hard that is. Death was the final curtain call. That person would be no more. Before the resurrection, all we could do is mourn like those who have no hope. But now, we have hope. What will our response be to life eternal, to Jesus raising from the dead? And we also will be. Don't doubt this. This is truth. And how do we know for sure? Because he told us. He told us clearly. He said, I go to prepare a place for you. And whoever believes in me will never die. Because of what we're celebrating today, Paul wrote, O death, where is thy sting? Where is thy victory? How do we respond to this kind of news? You know, it doesn't matter how great any Packer play is. Doesn't matter. And, you know, even the entertainment is not free, right? Doesn't matter how great any rock group is. Have you met the real Jesus? The real Jesus. Jesus Christ gives us a gift that no one else can. Gives us something to be excited about, to cheer about, that can't come from anywhere else. How do we respond to that? It's been said that it's impossible to meet the real Jesus and leave indifferent. Have you met the real Jesus? He loves you so much. So much that he was willing to throw himself in front of death itself for you. If today's the day that you feel God's call on your heart to meet him, there will be prayer partners up in front to walk through that with you. So after the service, I would invite you to come and speak with somebody. Or maybe it's just been a while since you felt that close relationship with God. Jesus says, I am standing at the door and I am knocking, ever so patient, for you to open the door and let me in. We can respond to this kind of experience in the way that we treat others. We can respond by allowing the joy of victory over death to flow over us, knowing that there is more. There's more going on than we can possibly understand or see. We can respond every day by thanking God for his great love, by realizing the gifts inside of us and using them to glorify God. We can respond in how we give, in our generosity, as we share our bounty with those less fortunate, or support the ministries that bring people into a relationship with Christ.